So what does a typical family partnership agreement look like? Well, again, it's very similar to your business operating agreement or limited partnership agreement. And as I indicated, attachment B has the ACTEC model form. And some of the more pronounced differences you'll see is a fairly extensive purpose clause in the model form or in a family limited partnership agreement or family operating agreement. And that's intended, as we'll talk a little bit later, to justify why what the non-tax reasons for forming our entity are. The family entity governing document will also have oftentimes a little bit more meat around the governance structure as it relates to families. Maybe there are different decision thresholds depending on who's in control. You'll oftentimes see dispute resolutions trying to move things ultimately to arbitration with an effort to try to keep the family dirty laundry out of the courts and out of the public eye. We'll also see in these family partnership arrangements that the allocations are under substantial economic effect. And I do know that there's a discussion about target allocations in this seminar, and you really shouldn't be using those in a family limited partnership context. And a lot of that is because of some of the court cases and some of the issues that we'll talk about later under 2036, which is one of the string provisions that the IRS uses to pull assets back into the estate. It's also very important that you have straight up allocations and distributions in your partnership. Again, the courts have seemed to fixate on that when it comes to 2036 issues. Because we're following substantial economic effect, you need to liquidate in accordance with positive capital accounts. Often in family agreements, family partnership or operating agreements, we don't require mandatory tax distributions because we're trying to disincentivize creditors from seizing that interest. In addition to that, you'll have pretty extensive transfer restrictions. And while that's often found in business deals, you'll often, in the family context, have a little more description around what happens in the event of divorce or death or disability. And you'll also frequently have exceptions for family transfers. Now, there are a couple special income tax rules that you need to be mindful of when you're dealing with family limited partnerships. Many family limited partnerships are funded with securities or stock, whether that stock in a corporation is publicly traded or some other marketable security, or even a closely held stock in a closely held business. When you put marketable securities or stock in a closely held business, a red flag needs to go up, and you need to think about the investment company rules that are made applicable to subchapter K. Now, those investment company rules are found in the C-Corp provisions under 351. And basically, what those investment company rules provide is that when you have an investment company, which is defined as an entity, or in this case, a partnership, whether it's an LLC or LP, that after contribution has fair market value of 80% or more in securities, and you have diversification. In other words, let's say that we have multiple people contributing different types of securities, and we have diversification. The investment company rules cause gain to be triggered. And when you go back and look at the legislative history under 351, it's not just the gain that's in the securities, but it's all the gain in all appreciated property contributed to the partnership. Unlike the C-Corp rules, the C-Corp investment company rules, where you can trigger gain and loss under the investment company rules. In partnerships, you can only trigger gain. So page 3 of my outline talks about the investment company rules. So again, that's just a red flag that needs to go up when you're dealing with securities, be they publicly traded, or closely held stock. The other thing you need to worry about is what I would refer to as the family limited partnership rules. And basically, those rules apply anytime a partner in the partnership receives its interest in the partnership by gift. As long as you're complying with the substantial economic effect rules, you really won't have an issue. and what the family limited partnership rules do, and it's described in page 35 of my outline, what those do is they allow the IRS to reallocate income if you're not allocating income in proportion with the property ownership or in proportion with the way that services are rendered. So again, those are just two special things you need to think about when it comes to forming family limited partnership. So let's move quickly into what's better. Is it better to form an LP or is it better to form an LLC? And in my view, income tax wise, they're very similar. Transfer tax wise, there's really no benefit to one versus the other. I do think there's a benefit on the employment tax side with a limited partnership because you have a code provision that says distributions to a limited partner are not subject to a self-employment tax. The IRS tends to take the position that any distribution to a member of an LLC is subject to self-employment tax. So I would put the victory there to the LP. LPs are also do have some advantage under the franchise tax if you have a lot of passive income, because you have the passive income exception to the Texas franchise tax. Otherwise, I think LLCs are victorious. You know, it's easier to operate an LLC because you don't have multiple entities. We have the series statute in Texas that we can utilize in an LLC, but we can't utilize in an LP. And I think the liability protection in an LLC is a little better because you have more of a blank slate to define it in the agreement itself.